Shavua Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Hey. We're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on the Chof Dalet Amud Beit. So what we've been discussing in this perek, of course, has been, first of all, the selection of the Beis Din, which went directly to the question of how a person could passel a dayan, or passel an aid. Now, we never really discussed what exactly the person would have been saying or what aidus he would have been bringing against these people. What exactly would make them possible? We did discuss the idea of a psul in yichus. Let's say somebody was an eved, but we didn't discuss the type of behavior that would have created a psul for aidim. And that's what our Mishnah wants to talk about. So let's take a look at the list of the psulim. The Eluhina psulim. So what we're going to be talking about over here is specifically things that are possible that we would not have known from the Torah directly. Because things that are atoshet yot erosh ha'ed, is the way that the Gemara always compresses the pasuk, that we know that when we're talking about Goslin and so on, that is certainly something that is possible. But there are things that are possible for edus, and therefore for din as well, which are actually based on things that are minerabana. So let's say, Elohim apsumi, hamasachek bekuvia. Now we're going to be talking about what exactly that is, but it's some type of gambling, and what exactly the pagam is in that, that passels the edus, and machlokas in the Gemara that's coming up. Hamaveberibit, somebody who lends money out on ribit, mafriche yonim, also not clear what that means, people who fly doves. So we'll see. It's also talking about some type, possibly, of something similar to misachik bekuvia, that it's a bet, or that it may be a direct involvement of things that are similar to gezeirah. So chareish v'yit, and people that for the sake of making money are willing to be over on the iser of doing schora with shvi'it. All of these things are possible because it would be mean that he would be open to bribery, and anything that is going to make things better for him will be mated the din, or will allow him to say something that isn't true in his edut as well. Again, in the Gemara, we're going to be clarifying what precisely we're talking about in all of these cases. Omer Rabbi Shimon, actually, b'tchila hayu korin otan osvei shvi'it, and then mishrabu ha'anasim chazu lekrotan sochare shvi'it. Now, this is a very opaque statement. Doesn't seem to mean anything intelligible, and the Gemara is going to have a number of different approaches to what Rabbi Shimon means. But what he seems to be saying is that initially, the word for osvei shvi'it, sochare shvi'it, that we're using here, which is, of course, an iser, you're not allowed to do schora with business, with perosh shvi'it, they used to call the things that were being done osvei shvi'it. But then, mishirabu ha'anasim, when a lot of people came around that were not clear what the anasim are, but, I mean, an anas is usually someone who forces you to do things against your will. Chazru lekrotan sochare shvi'it. Then they started calling them, even these osvei shvi'it, they called them sochare shvi'it. What in the world? All right, we'll see all of that in the Gemara. Omer Reb Yehuda, when do we talk about these psulim of the people that are involved in some type of activity that we're saying here will make them a possible aid? That's only if this is their income. This is where they're making their money from. If the person has a different income, then along with these things that are usher, then it would be kosher. Again, doesn't make much sense and will be explored in the Gemara. So let's take step by step what this Mishnah presents us with. Misachek bekuvia, people who are playing cards or something they're utilizing cubes, kubia, so they're using dice for something. What exactly are they doing wrong? Maika avit. Well, basically, what they're doing is placing bets. And these bets are an esmachta. An esmachta lo kindness. You'll recall what esmachta means. It means when a person is committed to giving money where he doesn't really believe that he's going to be ending up giving that money. He is convinced that somehow he's the one that's going to be making the money and that he's not going to be the one to lose. So since in this case, in the event that he's taking money from people and living off of the winnings that he's making, so then he's taking money shelo kedin, because there never was really a kinyan on the commitment to pay that. Rav Sheshet says, no. Koki hai gavna lav esmachta hi. If the person knows that he is putting himself into a position that's not up to him, there's a strong element of luck, so then that means that he initially took into consideration that he's going to be losing. So how is that an esmachta? He obviously was committed to the game, right? I mean, that's the whole point. So his commitment to the game, though the Rishonim say that this would only be a true commitment if you're putting your money down on the table. So you're putting your money or your whatever it is that stands for your money in the betting house. You're putting it down on the table, and therefore you have essentially relinquished your right to control this money, and you know perfectly well there's a good chance that you'll lose. How could that be an esmachta? The reason that these people are puzzled, alafi she'ein asukim biyishuvo shel olam, it's because they are not involved in any way in the norms of how it is that you make money in the world, doing a serious business. They understand what making money is about, what losing money is about, and it's all a function of the normal way of business intercourse. If they have no sense of that, and sort of easy come and easy go for them, so they have no respect and no real feel for what is going on, and whatever they say in terms of their edus or their judgment of things is off base. That's the problem. Now, you'll notice, of course, that would fit very tightly with the closing words in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Shita, because Rabbi Yehuda says the only problem is where they don't have any other income. Well, I mean, how in the world would that make a difference if what they're doing is actually viewed as stealing, and it would be a form of geneva? So what difference would it make if they have other income? That entire idea of Rabbi Yehuda seems to be predicated on taking for granted that the problem is exactly what it was that Rav Sheshet said, and rather it's because ein asukim biyishuv shel olam. So Rav Yehuda is saying, well, if they're making money in other ways, so then they are sensitive to the realities of things, and that would mean that the Mishnah itself seems to be based on this machlokas between Rami Bar Chama, who believes it's an esmachta, and Rav Sheshet, who believes the problem is a loss of reality in which you simply don't have a real sense for the normal working of things. So the Gemara, of course, is going to discuss exactly this issue, because it certainly seems to be what's part of the Mishnah. So what would be the difference between these two approaches of Rami Bar Chama and Rav Sheshet? May binayu, ike binayu, the gomar umnoto hochrit. The difference would be if, in fact, they had another umanut. My gosh. And, in fact, the Tanan, it actually says, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, imatai bisman she'enem umanut elohu, avo yeshlem umanut shalohu k'sherim. But I'm very confused. So then that means that the time of the masnisin, it's saying beferish. The Mishnah is explaining itself. The Mishnah is saying that it's all because of Yeshuva Shel Olam, which is exactly what Rav Sheshet said. I don't get how in the world could Rami Bar Chama, who says that the problem over here is stealing because you're taking the money that other people put down on the plate, what does that have to do with whether you have another income? I mean, if you're a person who goes around stealing, what difference does it make what you do during the rest of the day? Kashel Rami Bar Chama. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, okay, maybe this is precisely the machlokas. In other words, the question is according to the Rabbana. So we're not talking about according to Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe in Ochinami, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's quite clear that the only issue is they became Yeshuva Shalala. But the machlokas was how did the Rabbanan in the Mishnah, the Tanakama in the Mishnah, understand the problem? Is it in terms of Asmachta, as Rami Bar Chama thinks? Or is it also in terms of Enasuka B'Yeshuva Shel Olam, except that they don't buy into the difference that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, well, if he has something else, then that would be okay, because maybe they're not over that point. Is that what you're going to try to tell me? That's not true. I'll tell you why not. Because Rabbi Yehuda says the word Ematai. He doesn't say, look, if it had said, Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Bisman Sheyeshlem Umanut Shelohu Kesherim, right? That's not what it says. It says that Rabbi Yehuda throws in, well, when is this true? Only if. Now, when you use those words, you're not coming to argue. You're coming to explain. So that would mean that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing on the Rabbanan. You can't tell me that Rami Bar Chama believes that there's a machlokas in the Mishnah, because v'chitema pligi Rabbanan alei de Rabbi Yehuda. The problem is that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi has reported a din as a klal in the way that Rabbi Yehuda uses his words in a Mishnah. And namely, what he says is that koma kom sh'omar Rabbi Yehuda ematai. If you have a Mishnah in which Rabbi Yehuda, instead of simply arguing, he says, well, when is this true? Or he says, Bamed varim amurim, what are the situations where that would apply? Wherever he uses those kind of words, he's not coming to argue. He's coming to explain. Eino ela lefaresh. So how could Rami Bar Chama believe that he's arguing al divrei chachamim if we just heard that the meaning would be lefaresh divrei chachamim? Rabbi Yochanan says, well, it's not quite the way Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says it. I agree that when Rabbi Yehuda says, ematai, when is that true? Yes, that is certainly lefaresh. But if he says, bamed dvarim amurim, that is not lefaresh. That is actually a way of expressing that I don't agree. Okay, but anyway, I mean, everybody agrees that in our Mishnah, where the word that Rabbi Yehuda used was ematai, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi agreed that ematai means he's not arguing on the Tanakhama. So how can you say that, well, Rami Bar Chama holds that the Rabbanan argue on the approach of Rabbi Yehuda and they don't believe that it's because of Yeshuva Shalala? What's your problem? Gavra, Gavra Karamit, I don't understand. Your problem is that you're asking Akasha and Rami Bar Chama from two shitas that are Amoraim. They're both, look, he doesn't have to agree with Rabbi Yochanan. He doesn't have to agree with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. These people are Amoraim, and he has a right to argue with them. So what are you asking? You can't taina against Rami Bar Chama from Rabbi Yochanan. Mar Savar Plige, look, it's all very nice. According to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, it's impossible to say they argue. But Rami Bar Chama holds they're arguing. And he was coming to explain the Shita of the Chachamim, who do not agree with this business of, well, if you have another income, no, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that you're stealing. So he's explaining, how are you stealing? You're stealing because of the fact that the person who put his money down didn't really think that he was going to be losing, and therefore he wasn't committed to allowing you to take it. So you're taking it away. Shelo kedin es asmachta. Now, how in the world could you say they're not arguing? Look at this braita. Hatanya. Ben sheyesh lo umanut shelohu. It says here in the Braita Beferish that there is the Shita that holds that it makes no difference whether there is another income or not. No matter what, he's going to be Pasul. So obviously the Chachamim hold that in any case, they are Pasul. I'm assuming that this is the same as the Chachamim in the Mishnah. So it's very clear that they argue with Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda says that it does make a difference. Yes, it does indeed. But that brisa is not the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Hayi Rabbi Yehuda mishum Rabbi Tarfonhi. The Tanya, remember that we have this big machlokas about whether a person, we have that whole crazy story in which a bunch of people make a neder about another. So one guy says, if that guy coming this way is an Uzzer, I'll be an Uzzer. The other guy says, well, you're crazy. If he isn't an Uzzer, I'll be an Uzzer. And another guy says, I'll be an Uzzer if either of you are an Uzzer. I remember that whole crazy story. So over there, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar, Bishum, Rabbi Tarfa, nobody is an Uzzer in those cases. Well, you say, I mean, what do you mean? You can't lose. He says, I'll be an Uzzer if either of you are an Uzzer. He's still not an Uzzer. How is that? Because of Ishalonit Nanizirut Elala Hafla'a. You can't make a Naziris based on our not knowing what's going on. Naziris means that there's a clear-cut commitment, which is the meaning of ish, the Adam Ki Yafli. It has to be somebody who's going to be making things clear. Well, this is not very clear. Fine. So if that's the case, then that would mean that Rabbi Tarfon holds that if something is not in your control, then that's not a clear statement. You're saying, if he's an Uzzer, then I'll be... That's not a statement, because, I mean, you don't even know who's an Uzzer over here. So what kind of commitment is that? So that would mean, according to Rabbi Tarfon, any time that you actually go ahead and make a commitment where that commitment is not under your control, so we can taina that, yes, the first brisa obviously holds, that it makes no difference, and that if whether or not you have a different income, you're a ganav because you're taking this. Well, then it has to be an asmachta. That's true. But who's to say that's the chachomim in our Mishnah? We know that there's a shita like that. The shita exactly of Rabbi Tarfon that we just had in Naziris. Something out of your control is not a commitment. So it doesn't make you a nazir, but it also doesn't make you committed to losing your money on a gamble. And because of that, it's very possible that the Chachamim in the Mishnah agree completely with Rabbi Yehuda that it's not an esmachta, and therefore, you know, there's definitely a way that Rabbi, you could have the approach of Rabbi Sheshes, you could have the approach of Rami Bar Choma, but either way, doesn't have a kasha from the fact that Rabbi, we have a bright over here that says otherwise. This may be a third shita. Okay, the next thing that we have in the Mishnah, after this gambling, is somebody who lends on interest. So he's a malveh beribit. Omar Rava. So here it's very interesting because Rava said, the Mishnah said somebody who lends on interest, but Rava had said separately that if somebody borrows on interest, he would also be posel eidos. Because remember that we have this halacha of Al Tashet Yad Chaim Rasha, Liyot Eid Hamas, and we know that we learnt out from the Pasuk that anybody who borrows money on interest is basically, in order to do, to get money, he's ready to go against an Isser D'Oraisa, so that would mean that he would maybe lie if somebody pays him money to testify falsely, or he would lie if he was a judge and he was being paid to paskin adin shelo kedin. V'haraya, he's ready to do against the Torah because of the fact that he needs the money. So how does Rav explain the Mishnah, though? The Mishnah says, malveh beribit, somebody who lends, not someone who borrows on interest. And, I mean, according to Rava, it should have said either one. Well, according to this, the Mishnah doesn't mean malveh beribit. It means milveh haba'ah beribit. So, in other words, anybody who actually makes this loan happen, which might even include the people that wrote up the contract or brokers and so on, which is a big machlokas elsewhere. So this means a milvah ba'ah beribit, whatever made this loan happen, if it was a loan on interest. And there was a maisa where bar benitus asilo betre sahade. There were two witnesses who were coming to say that a Mr. Bar Benitos, he was from Rio de Janeiro, and they said, one of them said, kame didi ozif biribita, this guy, I saw him lending money on interest. And another guy said, he lent me money on interest. And Rava, on that basis, passed Bar Benitos from being a witness. But wait a minute. Isn't this the opposite of Rava's Shita here? Didn't Rava just say that a guy who borrows on interest is puzzled for Eidos? And this witness said, I borrowed from him on interest. And that means that he is himself saying that he is not a kosher witness. So how can we believe that he is actually able to pasul Mr. Bar Benitos if he himself has pasuled himself? In which case, we only have one witness against Bar Benitos. So how come Bar Benitos is pasul for Eidus? HaTorah Amra Al Tashet Rosh HaEid, which of course there's no such pasuk, but it's a condensed version of Al Tashet Yadcha Im Rasha Lihiyot Eid Hamas. It was like Al Tashet Rosh HaEid. Okay, lots of ellipses in that, but that's the bottom line. So how did Rava pasul Mr. Bar Benitos? Rava Latayme. Remember, we had this Rava Shita before. Rava always said the din of Palginan Diburo, you could split into two parts what the guy is saying. What he's saying about himself has no legal validity. He's saying, I am a Rasha because I borrowed money on Ribbis. We don't hear you because you have no legal standing in the court to talk about you. All we hear you saying is, Bar Benitos lent somebody money on Ribbit. It happens to be that's you. But it's irrelevant that it's you did a psula Bar Benitos. And therefore, all we hear is two witnesses coming in, pasuling Mr. Bar Benitos for the same lending of Ribbit. Now, there was another maisa in which a tabacha actually was running a business in Muncie, and it turned out that he was selling treifa meat. So Rav Nachman pasuled him. Actually, in other places, it's clear that the Girsa is not Rav Nachman Shamte. He put him into Cherem, and he closed down his business, Avre. So he wasn't allowed to work any longer as a butcher because he's no longer someone who can actually sell without our needing to worry that he's lying as an aide when he says that his meat is kosher. But the Lashon Ovir of Pasle Reb Nachman means that he pasled him from giving eidus. So that's how it became in this sugya, the question of since he was ready to sell treifa meat for financial gain, so he would be ready to maybe be made sheker for financial gain or to paskin a din for financial gain. Anyway, this guy was quite upset at having lost his business. So he goes out and he's Rabbe Mazye Vetufre. He grows his hair long. He grows his nails long. He puts on a black suit. He looks like he's a big bal tshuva. So Sova Reb Nachman Lach Shure. So Reb Nachman said, okay, I guess he did tshuva. Omar Le Rava, well, how do you know? I mean, it's obviously worth it for him to do tshuva by pretending to be so frum, and that way he gets his business back. How can you trust this guy at all? So maybe he's just playing games. So says the Gemara, so then I understand. So when are we supposed to believe that someone actually did tshuva? I mean, is there no way that he could be reinstated here? Yes, there is, but it's Kiraviri Baravin. To Amar Aviri Baravin, Hachashud al Hatrifot Ein Lo Takana, someone who was actually at one time was found to be giving out treifa's meat, which means that he's always going to be suspected of selling treif. There's nothing that he can do until he goes to a place where nobody knows him. So in that place, it would make no difference because they have no idea that he is the old Muncie butcher. And in that place where he's not trying to prove anything, he then is Yachzir Aveda B'davar Chashuv. Either maybe if he finds something that's very valuable, he gives it back, which means that he's ready to lose money when that's the Chiyuv in the Torah. Oh, Shiyotzi Treifa Mitachad Yado B'davar Chashuv B'shalom. Or maybe if one of his own animals turned out to be a treifa, he actually throws it out and he doesn't sell it. And nobody knew that he was once a treifa butcher. So he's not proving anything. And he could have fooled everybody and sold it. Instead, he throws it in the garbage. Okay. There's a big machlokas over here, by the way, about whether this halacha is true in all cases, meaning that will only be makabel someone is doing tshuva when he proves himself? Actually, the Ramban says no, that we're only machmer over here in somebody who's being misapik treifus to the tzibur. But there's also a shita that holds that that this is bedavka only in a case where he needs to get his business back. So in that case where he's been deprived of his business, there we're very chayshed that this is a game. But otherwise, why would we be chayshed people at faking that they're doing true tshuva? Next case in the Mishnah. Mafriche yonin. What exactly are people who fly pigeons? So Acha and Bavel, Tirgumua, it's talking about e tigdeme yonach lion, I'll pay you X. So this is basically pigeon racing. And they're making a bet. Each guy says, if your pigeon comes in first, then I owe you so-and-so. So they're making a bet about the pigeon's arrival. Reb Chama Baruch Aya Amar, it means an ara. An ara, fascinating idea. This guy basically wants to get other people's doves and pigeons out of their dovka and go to his. So what he does, I know there's different approaches to how he does this. He trains them to these are real honey traps, gets his beautiful pigeon to trap all the pigeons in the area, come running into his dovka. Others say that it's a trick that you tie the pigeon and it can't fly away from your home. So it's very frustrated and it's putting on a big show over there with a lot of noise and chip, chip, chipping. And basically all of the other pigeons in the neighborhood come to see what is going on. Why is this pigeon making such a fuss? And then you trap them just as they come to see the show. Okay. Whatever the approach is, an ara means somebody who leads others away. So it's like a decoy. All right. So it's a completely different thing. So that would mean it has nothing to do with the betting issue. It has to do with stealing other people's pigeons. So now let's try to understand this. If it's a question of betting whose pigeon comes in first, why wouldn't he want to say that it's talking about a new idea, which is the ara? Well, an ara is not going to really be puzzle because the only issue over there is b'pnei darkei sholem b'alma. Look, the halacha is that pigeons don't really belong to you. If you build a little birdhouse, a dovecot, for these pigeons to come in, and they come in and stay there, does that mean they're yours? Were you actually kind of them? Did you pick them up or anything? No. But the point is, there's no kinyan. However, look, the minig is that people view the pigeons in their own dovecot. They take it very personally if you would take a pigeon out of their place. So, because of that, the Rabbana made a takana that mipnei darkei sholem, in order to avoid real types of fighting between neighbors, so they indeed assert taking another person's pigeons by doing things like decoying and so on, right? So since the whole halacha is not really based on gezeila, it's based on darkei sholem. So because of that, he says, look, I don't want to say that someone who is over on darkei sholem is going to be puzzle as a witness. So because of that, I understand it to mean a question of gambling over pigeon racing. And the other man, Yomar, who says ara, what's his problem? Why doesn't he say it's the same gambling issue? Well, he says, obviously, what's the point of mentioning gambling if we already had gambling? The first case that we had was Misachek Bekuvia. Misachek Bekuvia was dice on something. I don't care what it is. So what are you doing? You're substituting the pigeon for the dice? I mean, like, you're playing cards versus playing pigeons. It's all the same thing. So why would it be the same case? That's why I say it's got to be talking about a new thing, an ara. So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what, we're going to mention every different type of gambling? V'idach, and the one who says it is talking about pigeon racing. So how does he explain that? Well, there's two different types of betting around here. Remember that the whole idea of this being an Esmachta was like a big machlokas, right? So it's right on the edge of the concept of Esmachta. Now look, I think there's clearly a difference between someone who is tola bedat atzmo and someone who is tola bedat yono. Let's say a guy is a great poker player, right? Now he makes a bet on his poker playing. He's making that bet because he knows that he is a darn good poker player. So because of that, he actually is sure that he's not going to be losing. But on the other hand, when he is relying on his pigeon coming in first, he realizes he doesn't have much control over his pigeon coming first. Maybe this other guy has got a very well-trained pigeon. And we need both of these cases because each one of them adds something. Let's say we talked about the guy who's the poker player. So maybe over there, we're ready to say it's an Esmachta, because he doesn't really think he's going to lose. He's convinced that he's going to win. So like we says, the guy says, I know that I'm a better poker player than the other guy. So Kimlon ben Afshoy de Yadana Tvei. So he's relying on the fact that he's got the skills to make sure that he doesn't lose his money. That means that he does not have real intent to risk this money. Somebody who is tola bedat yono, he's going to be relying on his pigeon doing a good job. I mean, how confident can you be that your pigeon's going to be the best pigeon in town? So Emalo, maybe over there, it's not called an Esmachta because it's much more realistic for him to consider the fact that it's very possible that he's going to lose. The itana tola bedat yono, let's say we would have the other one. I'd say, you know what? The idea of being tola bedat yono is because there is actually a way to get your pigeon to perform. And what they used to do is they would train a pigeon to be responsive to a particular rhythm. And if they would move the rhythm up, then that's called the nakasha. It was a way to bang on the drum, so to be. So he figures, b'nakasha taya milta, v'ana yadana l'nakushe tvei. Listen, I'm one of the experts in getting this rhythm. I know exactly how to up the rhythm in a way that's going to get that pigeon to go wild for me. So maybe the opposite. Maybe that guy is not ready to really risk his money because he's convinced he's got it down to a science. But tola bedat atzmo, I mean, look, he knows he's a good player, but I mean, it's not that it's 100% he's going to be winning every single game of poker. So, I mean, maybe over there, look, the guy is not so sure. It's not called an Esmachta because he's into the game and he's willing to risk his money. Maybe because he feels, you know, overall, at the end of the day, I'm going to come out positive. But he's certainly throwing his money onto that table, understanding that it's very possible he's going to lose it. Maybe not. So maybe that's not called an Esmachta. So the Mishnah wants to list different type of things that you might see a way for not to consider them an Esmachta. And nonetheless, they are Esmachtas. Now, obviously, all of this is going according to Rami Bar Choma, right? Because according to Rami Bar Choma, the problem is Esmachta. You know, according to Rav Sheshe, as we said, the idea is that he doesn't have any kind of serious involvement in a real world. So, I mean, he had no choice. Rav Sheshes is going to have to explain that the Mishnah is talking about an Ara, because he doesn't believe that there's actually a Esmachta. Meisvei. So let's take a look. You're saying that we're talking about making a bet on a pigeon race, okay? That was Rav Chama Bar Hoshea. But take a look at this Braita. The Braita says, I'm a Sachik Bekuvia. It's going to explain actually each one of the cases that we have in our Mishnah. So there's a braita written on this Mishnah, and it takes each one of those cases. Hamasachek bekuvia. So, okay, he is involved in playing dice. So elein hamasachekim befisfasin. Look, it doesn't matter what it is. They're playing cards. Lo befisfasin avad, belvadam, rafim, klipe agozim, klipe rimonim. It could be just, you know, not a professional card or anything like that, not professional dice, but something that, you know, they made to be able to use as it. And when is such a person meaning he's considered to be reinstated. When is such a person chozer that his tshuva would be accepted? Mishi shabru et pispeseyem liyazru bel chazor gemura. It's only when they tear up the cards, throw away the dice, and they no longer play. Da'afilu b'chinam lo avde. They don't even play for free, not for money. So, in other words, it's certainly not the type of complete addiction that he had before. He doesn't play anymore. So therefore we have no reason to be chayshed that he would actually take money to be made b'sheker or to be a judge that would be open to taking bribes. The next case, malveh beribit. Now the truth is, as we saw before, echad malveh ve'echad loveh. The truth is that we say it's not only the lender, it's also the borrower. The imatai chazaratan, and what about them? When do we consider these people to be suitable for edim? Mi sheyikru et shtorehem v'yachzuru behem chazara gemura. They have to tear up shtarot that they have. And that's like a serious loss, because then they're no longer going to have a shtar to collect with. It's going to turn into a milva bal peh. And also, obviously, they're going to give their money, but the money back that they took. But in this case, to show a complete chazara means they no longer lend on ribis, even when it's mutter. Afilo lunochri lo musfe. They will not engage in ribis, because always tshuva means like being misrachig from the addiction that you had. Mafricha yonim. Elo shemamrim et hayonim. These are people that actually, so, okay, there's two pshatim over here. Either the mamrim is that he actually gets them to be competitors, or the pashtus is that these are pigeon fighters, you know, like cockfighters. And, okay, even though Aruch says it means that you actually are gonna get them to fight each other in terms of the race, but the pashtus is, like Rashi says, the idea of betting on who's going to win. And that is the next case. If you say mamrim et hayonim, so then it would mean lo yonim bilvad amru, ela afilu beima chaya v'olf. Anytime that you can get an animal of some kind to be engaged in this kind of business, It's nothing special about pigeons. The imatai chazaratan, mishi yishberu et pigmehem, v'yachzru behem chazara gemura. When they bust up those little drums or racket makers that they have, and they no longer engage in it. Which means that they won't even do it in the midbar. So over there, remember that the question over here is what we're referring to. That means that there would be no danger of taking somebody else's pigeon in this case. Socharei Shavias. Now this, of course, is going to help us understand what the Mishnah was talking about with that whole story of Socharei or Oisvei, which we'll get. But Socharei Shavias are people who are nosim v'notnim b'peirot shavias. They buy and sell peirot shavias as if it's normal schora. And when are they considered to be kosher le'edus and they did teshuva? Mishatagia shvi'it acheret. The next time there's a shvi'is and they absolutely have nothing to do with taking something, even things that would normally be mutter for them to take, they won't touch pera shvi'is. The Omar Rebbe Nechemia, this is not just Chazar's Dvorim. It's not that they say, I'm not going to be taking shvi'is. It's Chazara's momain. It has cost them money. Well, what do I mean? Well, the guy gets up in shul, you know, and he says, look, I so-and-so, I need plenty by plenty. I must say that last shvi'is, I made $200 from doing business with Peiro Shvi'is. I hereby grant that as charity to Aniyim, and I don't want to be nena from it. That type of thing. Anyway, but getting back to this idea of behema, now, what exactly are we talking about behema? I mean, if we're talking about behema in terms of the Yonah stuff, so I can say, yes, you can do the same kind of thing You know, you can have a horse race, or you can have a cockfight, or you can have a boar fight, whatever. But if it's talking about the Mandioma, who said that we're talking about a decoy, how exactly would you have a decoy on an animal? You can't. I mean, you don't have that whole way of getting an animal to come to you. So it must be referring to not an aras. You see from here, from the Braita, that the reference to the Mafricha Yonim is indeed people who are betting on the outcome of a battle, of a race, whatever. Says the Gemara, no, it's not true. There is a type of animal that you actually can do a decoy with. And that is a shor habar. Now, a shor habar actually can be trained to get other shorei bar to come away from other people who have them in their yard. But of course, problem is, not everybody agrees that a shor habar is a behema. What's the difference whether it's a behema or whether it's a chaya? The difference is whether it's chelev is mutter, whether it needs kisui adam. And that's a big machlokes. So we wouldn't have called it other behemas, you see, if we hold that it's not a behema. I mean, that's too sensitive a word. So it would be going according to Mandi Omar, shorabar is a min behema. It's not shorabar min behemahu. That's the Tanakama. Rabbi Yosi Omer min chayahu. So it could be that the Mandi Omer holds Ara would understand this Braita to be referring to a shor habar, and he would hold according to the Tanakhama and not according to Rabbi Yosi. Now, there were other people that were added to these people who are puzzled that don't appear in the Mishnah. Hosifu Aleim, they then added subsequently Gazlanim and Chamsanim. Gazlanim? A Gazlan? He's also Midian Raisa. I understand. What do you mean? They added. We're talking about lower level things. Sulei de Rabbanan. Why are you suddenly saying they added a Gazlan? A Gazlan, what, he's a highway robber? I mean, obviously, he's going to be also. We don't need them to Aser it. He's a de Raisa. No, we don't mean that. We mean that Lumnitzchar Lumitziat Cheresh Shota Vikatan. It's saying somebody who would steal a lollipop from a baby is considered to be puzzle for Edus. Even though Lamaisa, since Mitzias Chereshayt of a Katan, or a child who finds something, it's not really his. But the Rabbanan, they made that something that's considered to be, as we'll see, Darkei Shalom. So initially, we believed that that is something that is so rare. What are we going to now make a whole new category of psul edas for people who steal lollipops from babies? I mean, you know, come on. So it's just the Rabbanan don't talk about such a, he's psul edas because we saw him stealing a lollipop from a baby. I mean, come on, it's crazy. Or maybe because even if they would have found it to be common, it's only mipnei darkei sholom, and therefore maybe it shouldn't be considered to be a real geneva. But kima dechazu sof mamono dekashaklet, when they realized that, look, but the psychology of it is the same. The bottom line is that the person is willing to act like a real total bum just because it saves him some money. And therefore, of course, you need to worry about the fact that he would do the same thing in order to make money on false testimony or to accept bribes. All right, what about the chamsani? Okay, a chamsan means somebody who pays for what he steals. So the guy doesn't want to sell him something, and he takes it and pays for it. So why exactly do we not include that automatically and then have a real new category called Hakamsani? So initially, the Rabbanan hold that Akroi Be'alma, this doesn't mean that the person is somebody who would sell his soul for money. It basically, he didn't, even though the seller wasn't interested in the sale. Lamaisa, in the end, okay, so the guy wanted it very much. He drove the guy crazy. He pushed for it. And went, okay, so that's not considered to be a way in which a person would go around, would actually take money in order to paskin wrongly, in order to say an edus wrongly. But given the chazit kachatve, then they saw these people are not just that they keep pressuring a person to sell as a lotachmot kind of thing. They actually grab the thing and throw the money at him. Now that's already, that's like, well, the guy is not agreeing at all. So over there, they made this as part of normal gezeila. Other people, odosif aleihem, says a braita, haroim hagabaim v'hamochsim. Okay, so roim are shepherds. We'll see, actually, the roel we're talking about is not quite the shepherd, but we'll see. Gabaim. Gabaim are people that are empowered by the government to collect taxes. And mochsim are government approved customs. So they stand at the bridges and so on. Roim. So why weren't they considering the problem of roim is that they actually go and allow the animals to go into other people's fields. So initially they felt that this is something that is not the normal way. It might happen once in a while, and it's not, we have no reason to think that they do it on purpose. So that's not good enough to pass on them for edus. But given the chazuk mechavne, they saw that no, on the contrary, these people were very, very focused on seeing to it that they would get their animals to go into somebody else's field on purpose, and they would get them in there by fooling them into there with whatever, either bringing them in physically or putting food down there for them to start grazing there. So they're shodol lechatchila, then they would go zerabbanan. And what about gabaim and mochsim? Well, initially they thought, look, I mean, they're government-approved collectors, and they probably are only collecting what they were supposed to give, collect according to the government assessment. So they're not doing anything wrong. Those taxes are actually based on dinin malchus adina. They're kosher taxes, and somebody who's collecting them for the government is doing some perfectly normal, acceptable, and legal business. But then, given the chazit de kashakli yitira, and they realize that most of these people are actually very not careful about how much they're taking, and they overcharge. So because of that, they consider them to be, in general, let's look at them as possible. Omar Ravon, we're talking about a ro'eh. So now, a ro'eh can be a shepherd or it could be a herdsman. So it could be a ro'eh be'im adaka, which is a shepherd, as he's going around with sheep, or he could be a ro'eh be'im agasa. He's taking a herd to different places, or whatever it is. It could be cows or whatever. And it doesn't matter, says Rava. They're both possible. What? Rava holds they're both possible. But Rava was the one who says that ro'eh be'im adaka be'eretz Yisrael psulim b'chutz la'aretz k'sherim. That if someone is a small animal shepherd, then in Eretz Yisrael is possible. In Chutz La'aretz, even that is kosher. But someone who herds cows or horses, afilu be'eretz Yisrael kasheri. So obviously he does not, how could he say over here that it doesn't matter? There's certainly a special din, which we know all over we have, that din is called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is one of the big Yisaitis. We have many halachas based on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So because of that, if he's a ro'eh be'im adaka, dafkin Eretz Yisrael, we consider it to be, even though it's not that normal that he's going to go into other people's rishos, we don't even allow it, and therefore he's possible. But if he's a chutz la'aretz, we're not worried about that. But in Eretz Yisrael, we would allow even people who are herders of be'im gasa. So I'd explain that. Now we're saying a Rava doesn't hold that, and he holds that it doesn't make any difference, you're puzzle, no matter what. No, that's different. That's talking about people who raise animals, meaning they've got like a little barn in the backyard. They don't go around with these animals. They have like, they have their own, a couple of cows for milking and stuff like that. That is what he was talking about, which that's not considered to be a problem. If it's a Bema Daka, even that's a problem, because these small animals, they get out and they run around and so on. So therefore, that is different than the case where you're actually taking them out to other people, areas where other people are around. And that is very reasonable, because remember, we just had in the Mishnah before, the Mishnah said, Ne'amanim alai shlosha ro'ei bakar. And what does it say, ro'ei bakar, specifically? I would accept even people that are herders of cattle. And so that person was, we had the machlokas, whether he could change his mind. What is that referring to? I'm assuming that's referring to edus, and they can come and be made. And that means that if he wouldn't have said that I accept it, then they would not have been acceptable. No, for heaven's sakes, of course not. If it was referring to edus, why would we need three of them, for heaven's sakes? It's just the opposite. You're talking about three people, then we're talking about judges, last I heard. Enim are two. So the Mishnah was talking about Ladina, Dekana, meaning Tani Shlosh Sharoe Bakar. If we'd be talking about Adas, why would we need three? So, okay, so my Ladina? So why do we have to talk about Shlosh Sharoe Bakar? I mean, anybody who's not a Bucky and Din. And what difference does it make if he's a Roe Bakar? It would be the same halacha. The guy doesn't know what's going on. He's an ignorant person. And even if you say an ignorant person would be my dayan and I accept it, would be the same thing as a roe bakar. So I don't understand, why does it mention shlosh roe bakar if it's not talking about edus? Any tlasid olgamir dinanami would be exactly the same. If you don't accept them, then you can't have them as a judge. No, it's what it's saying is, even if it's a person, Afiluhani, the lo shchichi b'yishuv at all. I'm just going to like really an extreme. Most people, you know, you're a city dweller and you know what's going on in life and you know about business and you're exposed to coffee shops where everybody's talking about what's going on. A guy who's a roe bakar, I mean, he's not, to say that he's not like mixing with people. I mean, he doesn't see anybody. There's nothing like somebody who lives in a city. So it's trying to say in the Mishnah, even if you went all the way down and you said you would take three people for your judge that know nothing about life, they are living at 2 centuries ago, even that would be okay. Afilani, if you accepted it, you can't change your mind. That was good for the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim. Amar Rav Yehuda, I just want you to know that a regular ro'eh is possible, ipso facto, whereas a regular gabai, if he's a stam gabai, he's kosher. If we don't have indications that this guy is taking more than he's allowed to take as a tax collector, we're not going to say the very fact that he's a tax collector makes him possible. We need to have some basis on it, and we found that he seems to therefore be one of these people who are not reliable tax collectors. And there was a Maisa, Rabbi Zera's father. He, for 13 years, he was making his living as a tax collector. So Avod Rabbi Zera Ova Gabyuta Tleisar Shnir. So whenever the guy in charge of the government tax collecting would come around to town, Gaviasi Reish Nahara Lamata, Rabbi Zera's father, if he saw any Rabbanon, he would say to them, the Pusik, Lechami, Bo Bechadarecha, go and hide, my people. Go into the rooms. Let nobody find you. Gaviasi in Shidemasa, if he saw people that he couldn't trust, I mean, he had to tell them to go hide. He could really get thrown into jail himself for doing that. So what he would do is he would pretend to be, oh, we're going to get you good tomorrow because they're going to be here with the cops and everything, and we're going to be shechting families, let me tell you. Reish Nahara Atalamasa, you know, the guy in charge of this whole area, he's been coming in tomorrow, and Haidna nakis abala fum brola fum abba. He's going to be shechting fathers in the presence of their children, children in the presence of their fathers. You guys are finally going to learn what it means to pay taxes. And of course, everybody who hears this goes and leaps down or hides out. So then when the guy would come, and then everybody would go into hiding, of course, the guy would come and he'd say, well, seems very low population around here. We were thinking of raising the city's taxes. Remember, they used to raise, and then the city would have to, like, split it between the people. So Reb Zera's father would say to him, I understand. Where exactly am I supposed to raise that kind of money? Do you see the population around here? There's nobody around. Anyway, Kinecha Nafshe, as he was dying, Reb Zera's father, Amarlahu, he said to the people with him, Shkolu Tlois Harmoi Tzare Libis Adinoi Vahadru Leplanya. There was like 13 cents that I have wrapped up in my turban and give it back to Mr. So-and-so because I had taken that for him. It turned out that the bill was 13 cents cheaper and I didn't get a chance to give it back to him before dying. Please make sure that he gets it back. That's what kind of tzaddik a person can be. Even if he's working in Gabaut, I'm sure that our own Gabai is certainly one of the most reliable, and therefore this is a proper dot for him. All right, everyone, Bezrat Hashem, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Hine El Yeshua Si Eftach V'lo Efchad, and may we be zecha to see Nisim and Eflois in the continuation of the current. Taking a little bit too long for me, but I suppose after a few thousand years, you could stand to wait a week longer. So, Bezrat Hashem, we're looking forward to the Nisim of the coming week. As long as we don't take them for granted, remember. Shavua Tov, Umevorach, everyone.